The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
We're talking about relationships. And talked about making a connection and maintaining that connection. And if the connection is broken, to restore it. And
that's what we're talking about in this workshop. And like I said in the description of the workshop, we want to address this not only from the teacher's vantage point, but also from the parent's vantage point. And so that we understand one another, because we are to work for the same goal. And that's our tie, that we have here a child or children that need some molding, they need some character training, they need education, yes, but they need beyond that. They need to be trained, taught. And so we're working together to educate them and to mold their character into the character of Christ, and to be like that. So we remember that these children belong to their parents, and that we as teachers are an assistant to the parents. That is the parents' responsibility, but they have delegated this responsibility to us for several hours, for several days a week, to help them to mold the character of their children and to help them to be productive in society, productive in the church, and to establish their own homes eventually if God leads that way, that they could then perpetuate the faith and to continue to be light in this world in which we live. It would be helpful, maybe, in addressing this subject for me to know how many of you are currently teaching. May God bless you in that. How many of you are parents but not teaching? All right. So we want to include both. And I may ask questions of the teachers, and I may ask questions of the parents in this, and hope that you respond to the questions that are asked. The teacher is delegated by the church, by the school board directly, but the school board is an arm of the church. And so it, at least in our church-run schools, that's the way it is. And so you are a help to the church. And even if it's a parent-run school, a patron-run school, yet you are delegated by God for this responsibility to teach. And it is affecting the Church of Jesus Christ. God expects the home, the school, and the church to work together. He doesn't expect us to pull apart, and that the school would have different objects, different rules of operation, so much different from the church, or different doctrines and so on. But he expects us to teach the same thing. When the parents and the church and the school are teaching the same thing doctrinally, that strengthens the faith of these children as they face life. And so we can sing, "Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The fellowship of kindred minds is like to that above." And we pray, "Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven." Kindred minds, that our minds would be just like those of the angels serving God. The teacher and the parents striving together, working together, not striving against each other, but working together against the forces that would take these children away from the faith in God. Now, I don't know if you want to reveal yourself here, but are you teachers of the kind that you're apprehensive about relating to parents? Or you welcome that? You seek it? And you, where are you in that spectrum? How do you find it? Jonathan or James?
I confess that makes me a little nervous.
Okay.
It's usually easier if it's initiated, but it's not something I
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's normal. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about addressing something with the teacher? Do you welcome that? Or if the teacher calls, are you, what's going to come out of this call? Now what did they do?
No, it's been good for us. I guess my experience does not lead me to be apprehensive of it. It's, you know, life is real. They'll work together. The reality of potential problems is always there. It's just
okay. Now, what are some of the things that could cause a teacher to be apprehensive about contacting the parents or when the parents contact them? What are some things that can cause that? Why would a teacher fear that? May not be your experience, but what could cause that? If a parent is not understanding or not supportive, sure, then that could cause some fear for the next time. If you're teaching in a new community, you don't know the parents. You don't know who's who. I remember in one case where I had a student that needed to be paddled, and it was in a community that I had not lived very long, but the student needed to be paddled in. And I proceeded to do so. And one of the other teachers said, "You paddled that man's son?" And I said, "Yeah, I did." And she said, "You better get ready. There's going to be some paybacks on that one." And I thought, well, thank you for the warning. I'll prepare myself. I never heard a word about it. I'm not sure why, but for some reason that parent did not retaliate against me for that. But there was something there then after that that I was a little cautious, but I decided that if that son of that man needed to be paddled again, I would have to do it. Now, in paddling, I didn't do a lot of that. I had a lot of other methods. And I was involved in all the paddlings in the school because I was principal, either as an observer or the one giving the paddling. And in my years, I was involved in one paddling a year on the average. Some people say that wasn't enough, but we did. We had lots of other methods to deal with it. That's kind of off the subject. But communicating with the parents, we have to know who the parents are and what do they expect. But then there are school rules, and the school rules are so, and so that's how we operate, regardless of what the parent says.
I guess I just have a really good question. I remember the teacher in school, I've talked a lot of school, and I know teachers often say, you know, they welcome parents, preserve the classroom. With my experience, when I was teaching in a Bible school class, and all of a sudden there'd be three or four other teachers or something come in, and they're kind of nervous.
Okay.
How do the teachers really feel about that? All of a sudden, parents come in and stand there. I always kind of thought the worst, you know. In some ways, I've been not a lot of times, but I was a little hesitant just to walk in the classroom and stand there and.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's just me. You're sharing an interesting observation, and that is that the teacher can be uncomfortable coming in, but the parent can also be uncomfortable coming in, or the parent feels like he's intruding, and the teacher might feel the same way. So why not just relax and both enjoy it? Just realize that there's some apprehension here on both sides. Hey, we're going to make the best of this visit. My students used to always say they wished that we had visitors more often because they thought I taught better when there were visitors there. I declared I didn't, but they said, "Oh, yes, you do." So I don't know. Maybe I did. That's what they said. But I always welcomed visitors. I enjoyed having visitors there. even school board members to enjoy them. All right, yeah, you can be intimidating, but we need to overcome that. The parents are humans, the children are humans, we're humans, so just get used to it. Don't worry about it. It would be abnormal to panic and to close the door, and that raises suspicion. I worked with two teachers who their classroom was their realm, and they did not want visitors. And they did not want the school board coming in. They didn't want the principal to come in. They didn't want anybody. That was their realm. And I remember going into the classroom one day, and I was there maybe 5 minutes, and the teacher came to me and said, "What do you want in here?" And I was the principal of the school. And I said, "I visit all the classrooms, and I just wanted to do my job and visit this classroom." And she said, "I have everything under control. You don't need to be here." And I went on another day. I thought that, and I had conferred with the school board, and the school board said, "Sure, you need to know what's going on in that classroom." I went into that classroom again, and she left, went, sat in the car. That was her last year of teaching there. But there's more to the story I don't think I need to share. But that's abnormal. And we need to be open. So what if the principal comes in? He's doing his job. And let him do it. If the parents come in, they're just checking to see that you're doing your job. And they suppose that you're doing it. They're not suspicious of you, probably. They just want the confirmation that their child is doing well and you're doing well and everything's going well. And it's a confirmation to them. And they go home and they feel good about the school because everything was proceeding as they would have expected it. Right. You know, I didn't like making a mistake, but if I made a mistake and a parent was there and one of the students would correct me, "You didn't say that right," or "That's not right." And I always viewed that as being an opportunity for the parents to see how I respond when I'm, you know, when a student tells me you did something wrong. I wasn't feeling really bad that I'm embarrassed that I made that mistake, because it was an opportunity for them to see me at my worst, you know, when I said something wrong, and how the class related to me and how there was openness there. So that's not, don't worry if you say something wrong. Use that as an opportunity to show how you respond and to reveal your humility before the parents. Helps them to understand you and get a good picture of it. At my major job that I am involved with is in selling gravestones, and it's interesting to see what people have carved on their gravestones. But recently we had one that they ordered, and I'm not sure if this was a common saying of the gentleman, but they wanted inscribed on his gravestone, "Thou shalt not sweat it." And maybe that's something he often said, but you know, there's a rule there. Don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. Just be yourself and do your job, and everything will turn out well. All right. That can be carried too far, of course. How can parents help? Parents can help by encouraging reading. Reading is basic, it's fundamental to learning. A child needs to learn to read. A child needs to enjoy reading. You might have a second or third grader who has already decided, "I don't like to read. I'd rather play with my trucks. I'd rather ride my bike. I'd rather do this or that than read a book." Well, what are they interested in? If they're interested in horses, or they're interested in birds, or they're interested in whatever, find a book about that and have them read what they are interested in, and what they'll do is they'll read that to expand their knowledge on the thing that they're interested in, and they'll learn to enjoy reading about that subject at least, and then expand that to other subjects. And you can help the child to overcome the thought that I don't like to read. If you help, and maybe you have more helps on that. But talk to your children about school. Find out what's going on in school, and listen to them. What are some of the struggles that they face, or some of the good things that they face, and so on. Allow time for homework. Teach respect for authority. Don't let them talk badly about the teacher, but respect the authority of the teacher. Show interest in the child's academic growth. If you see an improvement in grades, comment on it. Or if they're constantly high, comment about that without building up the child's pride. But to if you have a child that's in the 80s for and a grade comes up and it's past that mark into the 90s or something, they pass from a C to a B or a B to an A, comment about it. Let the child know that you appreciate that. Maybe even reward them for it if there is an improvement in the grades. And acknowledge that this is not just intelligence that produces these grades. There's a lot of effort in there, too. What is the level of effort going into it that makes that difference? Now, some reasons why parents might be hesitant to talk to school teachers is because they have a viewpoint that's a wrong one, that teachers are more intelligent than other people. That's generally not true. Teachers may have gotten good grades in school, but they might not have. In fact, if you would look at some of the report cards of some of the people who have taught in our schools, they would be embarrassed to show you their report cards because their grades were not that good in school. And if the school board had seen their grades, they might not have hired them. But teachers are not necessarily all that more intelligent than others. But parents may have that feeling that I could never do it. My grades were not good enough. I don't want to downplay the importance of having good grades in school. Parents might have struggled in school, and here they are talking to the teacher who had an easy time, and they feel like they have nothing to offer in the child's education because the teacher is a smart one. That's not necessarily true. They know more about the child than the teacher does, and so they have a lot to contribute in the teacher-child relationship. They might have forgotten quite a bit. I was 40 when I started teaching school, and I came in with a lot of confidence. I had a 12th grade education. I had a diploma. I had studied in school, and I had learned, so I was ready to teach, and I came in the first week. I knew I suspected I was in big trouble, and the next week I knew it. And I stayed up and I studied till midnight, almost every night. And I studied Saturdays. And I had a tough time that first year. The reason was because of all the things that I had forgotten in those 22 years. And I needed to relearn it. Parents have forgotten. And so you say, why can't they help their child to multiply and divide fractions? Why can't they help them to diagram a sentence that's in their homework? Well, they just plain forgot it. And take a break for 22 years and see what you remember of diagramming a sentence. It's tough if you've forgotten it. Algebra. They might never have had it. And they have a student who's studying algebra, never had it. My wife said she used to take her algebra home, and her dad, she'd be struggling with a word problem and trying to get the answer, and she's trying to set up the formula correctly to solve it, and her dad would look at this, and he'd say, well, the answer is so. It's this. This is what the answer is. Well, how did you solve it? Well, you thought it through in his head. Well, but I need a formula. And he said, I don't need a formula. You just think it through. And he had the ability to solve those problems without knowing the algebraic formulas. It didn't help her much, but she knew what the right answer was, usually. There's time restraints, which some have the family farm, and when the children come home from school, they need to help with the chores, with the milking or whatever it is, and others, they come home, they feed the cat, and they're done. That's what their chores exist of, and they have the rest of the evening to play or to do homework. The other farm family or family with a shop doesn't have that, where when the children come home, they need to help with chores around home, or maybe there's someone who is ill, and they need to help to tend this person. Parents vary in their time restraints. They vary in their patience. Some parents are more patient than others. Some care more. Some love their children more. Some have more of a desire to be involved, and others don't. It's your business, and I'm taking care of mine. I don't like that kind of a relationship, but it exists in some homes. And we, as teachers, need to remember that and not take it out on the child just because their parents are not as supportive or can't be as supportive, that we don't take it out on the child and increase his level of frustration because of those conditions in the home. Report positive things as well as negative. Remember that. Parents like to hear positive things, and if you, especially if they know that you've been struggling with something with their child, and then there's an improvement there, let them know that it's improving. I've seen improvement lately. The parent feels good about that. You feel good about passing that information on. The child feels good that was passed on rather than just neglected or ignored. They surely let my parents, the teacher surely lets my parents know when I do something wrong, but if I do something right, the parents don't hear about it. And so, you know, pass that on. Let the good feelings flow. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that? What's best, a note or a phone call? What would you rather receive?
A phone call.
A phone call. Why?
Because you can communicate better.
Mm-hmm. What helps with the phone call? What's different about the phone call? You can ask questions, yeah. You can dialogue.
It's more real.
You hear the voice. You hear the tone of voice. You hear the emotion or lack of it. Yeah. You can read anything into a note, practically. You can misread it. You can misread the emotions. That's one of the reasons I do a little bit of texting, but I hate it. Because I'm always afraid that the person's going to read it with a different tone of voice than what I poked it in with. But sometimes a note is okay, especially when you make sure that this is worded. But when you talk, for me at least, it's easier to say something than it is for me to write it and have the other person perceive it correctly. Usually a phone call. Now, there are some things that are so minor that a phone call interrupts the day. And if it's something very minor, then a note is okay. But if you're dealing with this with a problem, dealing with a situation like that, then it's better to make a verbal contact and to talk to them. Any more on that? Now, I could have just mailed these notes to you. For some reason, you came here to sit and to hear this being discussed. Why? Because the dialogue is better. Right. What are some factors affecting behavior? Why do some children behave differently than other children? Well, there's differences in homes. There's differences in the level of discipline within the homes. There are some homes that are more disciplined than others. These children are coming from different homes, and so they may have been taught different manners or not taught. They might not have. Some are lacking the manners. There's some who would wipe their nose on the sleeve, and there's others who would never think of that. There's some who wouldn't even wipe their nose, maybe. But there's a difference in the amount of manners that a child has. Some are taught to say please and thank you and you're welcome. Others are not. Some are taught to say I'm sorry. Others just go on their way without knowing how to say I'm sorry. Forgive me. or whatever. There's differences in interpersonal relationships, how they've been trained to relate to others. Some are allowed more scrapping than others, where some are more wasteful than others. There's difference in support for the teacher, that some are very supportive of the teacher. Maybe they have taught themselves and have a higher or a reference, a point of reference to relate to is how a teacher feels, where others have never had a teacher in their family and don't have that vantage point. The teacher's attitude towards the children plays a big part. One of the reasons that the boys my age hated school from first grade is because we had a first grade teacher that locked the boys out of the room at recess time and played with the girls. That was an attitude that should not ever be found in school. The teacher's attitude plays a big part. Does the teacher relate more with the girls or more with the boys? And that can be difficult for a man. It can be difficult for a lady teacher to relate. But we need to relate to both, the boys and the girls. And be free. Now, we have to respect the difference in gender. But we can't ignore the girls just because we're men. Neither can we ignore the boys and just talk with the girls. That's not good if we're a man. And the same way with a lady teacher. School culture makes a difference, too. It's a large factor. There are schools that have had a reputation. This is a good school. There's order here. Students learn. They enjoy singing. They enjoy their studies. They study hard. They go into their studies well. There's other schools that don't have that good reputation. So if it's a good one, maintain it. Don't allow it to slide to a lower degree, but maintain that. That joy in singing, the joy in researching, the joy in writing, the joy in just learning, and maintain that. If it's a bad one, if this school has a bad reputation, I don't know anything about your schools out here, but if you would go to maybe change to a school where there is a bad reputation, some have taken that challenge to go into a school that has a less than honorable reputation, and go in there and say, I'm going to make a difference in this school. And what you do is you build a mini culture within that school and let it permeate. Now, we have to do that in an humble way. But to serve God in that capacity, to try to change this school, it may take a decade. It might take a generation. It might not happen during your tenure as a teacher there, but you may influence that school for the future, that when those students who were in your mini culture are the board members, that they say, you know, we learned under that teacher. We'd like to have a whole school like that. See, and how can you do it? Build a mini culture within. And I'm not saying that you need to go do your own thing. No, you need to work with your school board. But you don't need to perpetuate a bad situation just because a bad situation was there. You understand what I'm saying? Try to change it and improve it. There might be problems in the community. Maybe the church is undergoing a division. That could be very divisive in school, where students can form cliques. They generally will form the same cliques that their parents are forming in the church division. It's a bad situation. But it can affect that. There can be favoritism, where one child, you have to understand the children that you're teaching. Do these parents favor one child over another child? Do they sort of pick on one while they you know, talk well about the other one? And so the one that they talk well about, he's proud and arrogant. And the one that they're struggling with and finding fault with, he can have some bitterness and anger there that can, and both of them, their behavior is affected by that, by being the favored or the non-favored. Zeddy Jacob's children, what happened there? with Joseph and his brothers. There are ways of dealing with bad behavior. First of all, start with the student himself, herself. Well, don't go to the parents with something that you haven't talked to the student about. Talk to the student first. That's the first step. For you to betray the student's trust and go to their parents when you haven't talked to them is just not good. Talk to the student first. If it's not resolved, then go. And you can talk to the student and then go talk to the parents about it. Say, I dealt with this. I talked with the student about it, and he responded well, or he didn't respond well, and you let them know. But first talk to the student, then talk to the parents. If it doesn't clear up, if the problem persists, then, of course, talk to the parents for sure. And if you still can't find an answer for it, talk to the principal. Talk to the school board, and that's the level. Talk to the student, talk to the principal, talk to the parents, talk to the school board. Go through those. I had a problem with two girls. It was a problem with cheating. And I talked to the girls. And then the parents contacted me about it before I had opportunity. They talked to me the same day about it. And the one parent accepted what was done. The other parent didn't. And we had a consultation. And it turned into a confrontation. And I told that father, I said, you have one option. If you can't agree with what I'm saying. And that is, our school handbook says that if you cannot find agreement with the principal and you can't find common ground with the principal, you need to appeal to the school board. So I would advise you to do so. Contact the school board. He said, I will. And he did. But as he was driving down the road, leaving the school, I got on the phone with the school board chairman. And I told him, this is what happened. He's going to be contacting you. I'm not going to tell you the details, but I'm just informing you of what you're about to face. When that father came, the school board chairman listened to him, and he told him, you have two options. You can either withdraw your children from the school now, or you can tell your children that this is not to be mentioned again. We are going to submit, and that's the way it's going to be. And he said, if we hear anything from you or your children, you will be expelled from this. Your children will be expelled from the school. Now, there was a teacher, the school board helped that teacher tie, which the school board had not stood with me, it would not have been good. But we had a good relationship after that, and it never came up. I didn't bring it up, and they didn't. We were bound together for the good of the children, and they turned out well. It is important that we do have that. But sometimes there needs to be a standing for your rights as a teacher when you are right. We should not expect the parents to give unconditional support to us. But just because we're the teacher, that's the way it is. But sometimes we're wrong as teachers. Then we have to admit it. I was wrong, and I'm sorry. I've had to do that too. Or I had to tell the students I was wrong and I'm sorry. What I did was not right. I was not professional. I was not fair, not right. And to admit that and to go beyond and tell the parents. This is what I told the students. I told the students that I was wrong. I made a mistake. And I want the forgiveness of you as well as their parents. Don't just assume that because it was patched up between you and the student, everything's taken care of, because they can still say, I forgive you, and they can still go home and tell their parents and get the sympathy of their parents, you see. So don't just assume that, but admit to the parents, well, it depends what it is, that this is what happened. I said, I'm sorry, and the student said he would forgive me, and we go on. A parent can pretend to support the teacher, but the child is going to see through that. They will not be fooled very long. They'll sense the real feeling of the parents. If a problem persists, the teacher can become a drill sergeant. You know, I am the teacher. I am the authority here. You walk in line. You know, you do what I say, and that's the way it's going to be. And call out the orders and expect them to snap right to it. But that's counterproductive, really. That's a cat and mouse game that nobody wins, because it's always nip and tuck. The students will see what all they can get away with, and you'll see what you can do to clamp down, and it's a unfortunate situation. You can be an appeaser. You can say, okay, I can't control them. We'll just try to keep mayhem from developing here, and as far as that, they can do what they want. That's not going to be good either. Nobody learns in that situation. So what can we do? We can study our student. What makes them tick? What are they interested in? And talk with them and find out about the characteristics of their age. There's the CLE has a classroom manual, has in there some pages of what you can expect of children at different ages as they mature, as they come from childhood through the adolescence and all of that, things that they will experience emotionally and so on. And to study that and to see that in your children, which characteristics are coming through here. Study their academic abilities and their how they relate to peer pressure and all that. There's the other one, the manual for creative teaching, the green book about that thing. Very good. Very good book. Those two books, I think every teacher ought to have access to. I'm not saying every teacher needs to have them, but every school ought to have them, those two books, as a resource for the teachers, and study those things and understand the children in your classroom. Study yourself. Am I doing something irritating? We all have our mannerisms, and you may have a mannerism of rubbing your nose, then touching their papers, you know, and that might be irritating to them. If you know these things, don't do it. Overcome those habits, whatever it might be. Think about your, don't let it become a compelling fear, but think about what mannerisms do I have that may be irritating to students. Be consistent. If the rules are tough one day and loose the next, students never know. Is this a tough day or a loose day? Well, we'll find out. They don't have any other option. But if you're consistent, then they will know. Or if I had some days where the rules were tougher than others. And I would try to let them know whether this is a tough day or not. And that I was trying to be consistent. But right now, because of what's going on, there's no whispering today. Other days, you may ask your neighbor for a pencil or for an eraser. And then there was other times, okay, now we're just going to open it up for half an hour or so. You may talk out loud if you want to, as long as it's not too disruptive. If it becomes too disruptive, we're going to close it down again. It's a, kind of the green light, orange light, red light system. And if you're consistent in that, they will know what it is. Sometimes it's wise to offer a truce. I had a student that he and I were at loggerheads. I tried to keep him in line, and he tried to break out. It was a battle between us, and he didn't enjoy it, and I didn't enjoy it. And it was just, so how do you end that? So I took him aside, and I said, you know, we have this battle going between us. You're trying to get away with everything you can, and I'm trying to keep you in line. And it's not fun for me, and I'm sure it's not fun for you either, is it? He said, no, it's not. And I said, you know what I'm going to do here is I'm going to offer to back down. I'm going to relax my my stranglehold on you. I'm just going to, that's not the word I use, but just to relax and give you more room. Give you more room. And so then if you respond in like manner and you don't test me so much, then I can relax even more. And so you decide whether you want to keep this game going or you want, but I'm going to make the first step. I'm going to relax on you and see what happens.
You know what happened there? When I relaxed, he relaxed. And we developed a good relationship after that. There was a truce
that was offered, and he took it. Another teacher who was in that kind of a situation with the whole classroom, they would just test him. The whole classroom tested him. One time they came in from recess, and the students spent more time in the restroom. You know, you're a man teacher, and the girls are in the girls' restroom. You can't go in there and lasso and bring them out. You're kind of at their mercy. And so here he was, and they were not responding, following the rules like they should have. And so when they were finally in the room, he said, "Now, before we go into our lessons, I'd like to ask a few questions. What's a cowboy like?" "Oh, what's a cowboy like?"
"He lassos his cow."
"Yeah, he lassos a cow." "Mm-hmm." "Well, they said he wears cool hats." They wear cool hats, and they wear nice boots, and they ride horses. "Yeah, that's a cowboy." "Yeah, and they herd cattle, too." "Yeah, they drive them, don't they?" "Now, describe a shepherd. What does a shepherd do?" "He leads his sheep, right? And they follow. He goes, and they go. They just follow him." He said, "Do I ever treat you like a cowboy? Do I ever drive you?" And he said, "Yeah, you do." And he said, "I know I do." And he said, "If you would be more like sheep, I could be more like a shepherd." They said, "You decide. If you want to be cattle, I'll be the cowboy. If you want to be like sheep, I'll be the shepherd." And it helped. He gave them a visual metaphor there, and they understood it, that he's acting the way he was as a teacher because of the way they were acting. And he helped them to visualize that. I wish they were all that easy to solve, but that was good, I think, the way he handled that. All right, how to conduct an interview with the parents. This can be very scary. To meet with the parents face to face. You don't know what they're going to say, and you're not sure what you're going to say. Well, solve that problem and decide beforehand what you're going to talk about. Don't go into it open-handed, but be open-minded to their ideas, but have a plan. What are we going to talk about? What are we not going to? What's going to be on the table? What's going to be off the table? We're not going to talk about every problem with this student, but we're going to talk about major. We're going to talk about the root of the problem rather than the symptoms, and to get down to the root of the problem. And we need to understand as teachers that the parents are sort of caught in the middle. They can feel like they're caught in the middle because you're the teacher, their child is not responding well to you, and so they're caught in the middle there. They're supposed to solve this thing between you and the student. And they can have feelings on both sides, where they can feel like, well, the teacher's right to a certain extent, and they can feel like my child is right to a certain extent. And so they're caught in the middle, and they're supposed to find a resolution to this problem between you and their child, and they're caught in the middle. The child can feel like he's caught in the middle, because his parents want him to do so, and his teacher wants him to do so, and he's caught in the middle between them. You know, he's in the standing right in the middle of the firing line between the two. And the teacher can feel the same way. I'm caught in the middle. There's a problem between the child and the parent, and here I am caught in the middle of this whole thing. And so remember that we're all in this together, and we're not really caught in the middle. We're just involved in the thing, and we're all together, and we should be on the same side, so it should flow nicely. Remember that classroom control is your responsibility as a teacher. It's not the parent's responsibility to control your classroom. It's your responsibility to make sure that things flow as they should. We can ask parents, how do you deal with this problem with your child? But we should not expect the parent to solve our problem in the classroom. Be friendly, be polite, set the tone from the beginning. Smile at the parents when they come in and welcome them in, you know, give them a feeling that we're friends here and we have a problem to deal with, but this is an opportunity to work together and to view it in a positive way. Be polite. Offer them a seat. I would say this, that if you as a teacher are having an interview with a parent, don't sit while they stand. Do you know why? Because then they're talking down to you. There's something there just in the psychology of it. And don't have them sit while you stand, because then you're talking down to them. And there's something in the psychology there where you're putting them down. If they refuse to offer them seats, if they refuse to sit, stay standing. If, you know, just stay on their level. If they are seated, and at some point in this interview they stand, you stand. Don't stay sitting. There's something about the psychology there, that you're on the same level. Now, that's true as far as posture. But as far as the volume of the voice, if they raise their voices, please don't raise yours. If they raise their voices, you lower yours. And if they raise their voices some more, you lower yours some more. And eventually they'll lose their steam and their volume will match yours. You just stay calm and collected. Don't let the consultation become a confrontation. Keep it on a friendly, productive basis. Only present things that you're sure of. Don't present things that you're suspicious of. I think this is what's happening. If you start to present your imaginations, then everything can be perceived as possibly this is imagination. Where's the proof for it? But present the things that you are sure of. Things that you have proof. I found this note. I heard this conversation. I saw this. The things that you are sure of, those are the things. But things that you suspect, things that you imagine, that's not to be brought into this. Because if you don't have it figured out, if you say, I'm still trying to figure out what's going on here, that's okay. But don't say, I'm coming to the conclusion that. No, don't do that. Only present the things you're sure of. Am I right on that?
That's the idea.
that's the idea. That's right. Listen, allow the parents to express themselves, and don't interrupt them. If they're saying something that you don't see it that way, let them finish. They'll come. They won't talk all night. And when they're finished with making their comment, then you can make yours. But don't interrupt them. Let them come through to the end. Allow them to express themselves, and maybe even first, let them tell what they know or what they have observed, what they've heard about school and so on. Parents should remember that the teacher does want to be heard too. That the teacher called for the interview, maybe the parents called for the interview, but both sides would like to be heard. And that's where the production is going to come from. Productivity will come from both sides expressing themselves and being heard. Remember to maintain your professionalism in that you are a professional teacher, and so you will address yourself in a professional manner. Watch the slang terms that you use or whatever. Keep it professional. And remember that your opinion is your opinion. That's all it is. It's just your opinion. We share opinions in the interview. Keep the discussions short, as short as possible, as concise as can be. Express things concisely. Don't go rambling on and on and on, because they're going to lose interest and not hear what you said. So say it concisely, important things, and skip the other things that are not as important. If the people start repeating what they've said, then it's time to quit. There's no use
repeating ourselves. We don't have to repeat ourselves. Repeating ourselves doesn't help. You get the point? If you said something once, you've said it. And let it be that way. If it becomes accusatory. If you would support me, this would go away. You know, this problem would be solved. Well, maybe they are supporting you. And just don't make it accusatory. But offer to do your part in solving. An exit plan is always beneficial. How to reach a resolution. Take responsibility if you're at fault. I mentioned that earlier. I want to mention it again. If you're at fault, acknowledge it. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. They probably will not fire you or call for your being not asked to come back. Maybe they will. And so what? If the school board decides not to hire you back, will you starve? Will there be other things for you to do? Will God be done with you? No. So the worst thing that can happen is you can lose your job. And that's not a death sentence. You'll find other things to do. And I'm not saying you should do a sloppy job so that you are fired. That's not at all what I'm saying. But you understand that it's not the end of the world. If that maybe somebody, you know somebody who has experienced that. Oh, they're respectable things for them to do. Maybe teaching wasn't there. Their calling in life. But don't expect your parents to solve your problem. Thank them for coming. Thank them for being willing to come and to share and to have this openness with you. Pray with them before parting. Pray for yourself. Pray for for their child, for your student. Pray for the parents that God would bless them and have that prayer. Now, if the parents are angry, if this has become a confrontation, then to pray with them, you have to use some wisdom. Is the situation conducive to the prayer together? Or should you part and then pray for each other? You have to use some wisdom in that. Is that right, Paul? Yeah. There are some times when you shouldn't force an angry parent to pray for you. Pray with you. God wants to empower you to take charge of your classroom. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of
power,
and love, and a sound mind. Love for the students, love for the parents. We are often taught that we need to love our students. Is it also important to love their parents? Can we extend that love to the parents? And when we love the parents and we love the children, things will go well. All right. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of sight season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. God bless you as you take the responsibility to exercise authority in your classrooms. And God bless you, parents, as you respect that role that the teacher plays and play your part in working together. Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The fellowship of kindred minds is like to that of God. Bless that tie between the parents and the teacher.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.